Good morning.
Good morning.
Back in 1995, the fall of 1995, many of you know Ralph Ennis. He was involved with the commission at the time. Had at that point lived a year in Russia and was back. We were doing some strategic planning. And one of the things that Ralph, a comment that he made, just sort of threw out there and it didn't go anywhere, was, you know, honestly, I think you folks in Russia, if you want to do ministry here, you're going to have to figure out how to be experts at ministering to children of alcoholics. In my heart, I said, we're the navigators. We don't do that. Four months later, I turned 40. And bonehead that I am, I prayed, Lord, for this decade, help me to embody, to live out, to internalize, when I am weak, then I am strong. Have you seen one of those cowboy movies where they get the bad guy and they tie his feet up with the rope and they hook the other end of the rope to the horn of the saddle and they whack his horse and the horse goes racing off and he's dragged with his feet being pulled through the rocks and the cactus and everything? That's at times what it has felt like to internalize, when I am weak, then I am strong. Just, oh, the bruising, the beating. My wife has another view of it. It's Fiddler on the Roof, where, if you've seen that, Tevye is out delivering milk and the horse goes lame. So now here's Tevye pulling the cart and the horse is tied up at the back limping. And my wife feels like here she is pulling our family cart and I'm tied up at the back. Russia pushes my buttons. I grew up in an extended network of alcoholics. There's basically three of us adults who are not, out of a large Polish, Irish, Catholic family. And the other two, one's a cousin, one's an uncle, they both their wives are believers. Interesting. And I'm not an alcoholic, although I think I could be pretty easily. I even have a 19-year-old nephew and a cousin who has a 21-year-old son and a 17-year-old son who are alcoholics already. That's just... And one of the things that I began to have to do was, we're going to survive, if my wife is going to let us stay on the field, I got to figure out why I'm cycling, why I'm just being beaten up by Russia. And for those of you who aren't aware, I used to say probably 40% of all adult males, a mature adult, 30 and over, in Russia are alcoholics. But I've talked to a couple of nurses, American nurses, who work in the field of psychiatry and who've done some training with medical doctors and other nurses and healthcare professionals, and their estimate is it's closer to 60%. So we're talking 150 million large family alcoholic system. So when I go in there, pick out my buttons, and they push them. It's an abusive society. You don't have a lot of fun. I remember when we vacationed in Italy once, where we were on Sicily. It was kind of dirty. The geography was a lot nicer, the terrain, but it was kind of dirty and things were disorganized and you'd go somewhere and it didn't work the way you expected and you'd have to wait a long time and then all of a sudden it all come together. And I thought, this is so much like Russia, but people love life here. So I started a journey thinking, well, I've got to get to the roots of these things or I'm going to kill my wife and my kids are going to be so screwed up and how in the world can I ever have a ministry? And so after about 3 years into our time, our first furlough, we started a little bit on that and it picked up. This was 95 and God began to teach some lessons, help me to sort through some of these things, issues with losing my dad at age 4, getting cast into his role by my mother, who was emotionally wiped out and who my guess is has been at least 19 years straight clinically depressed. She was the child of an alcoholic, I'm convinced, although, and so is my sister, although Mom won't admit it, that she was probably sexually abused by her dad. Aunt, who was a prostitute, stripper, tried to drink a bottle of ammonia to kill herself. I could go on and on. People murdered. Peggy mentioned this yesterday, Seattle. I told her an illustration a long time ago. Well, her kids, actually. But I was riding my bike. I was about 15, 14 years old. One of those big 27-inch 10-speeds. And there was a hill. And at the bottom of the hill, the road veered off. I was with two buddies. And there's a gravel parking lot. And we were going to cut through the gravel parking lot and go over to one of the buddies' houses. And we're racing down. And, you know, on a hill, you can get some... We were probably doing 30 miles an hour. We go across this gravel parking lot. And I turned a little with those skinny 27-inch, you know, racing bike tires. And I go down in the gravel, and I must have skid in the gravel on this elbow about, you know, 15, 20 feet, just then. There's sand and dirt and little pebbles embedded in my arm. That was the last time that I really cried as a teenager for pain, just physical pain. And I was sobbing. And my buddies are on my case, and you're such a wimp. And so I finally come to, and, well, we got to clean it out. And we know that, so we go to the friend's house. And they're taking washcloths and soap, and they can't get the stuff out. There's rocks, and they're in, and they're picking them out with their fingernails. And I start crying worse than I did in the parking lot. That's what it felt like going through the issues in my family and in my life. The wounds and the lies I began to believe and the strategies that I used in order to never have to face those wounds again. That hurt more than the things actually happening, I think. But what's the choice? I don't clean it out. And I leave that in there to fester and rot? I mean, you got to clean it out. Well, we go back to Ralph and Jen. Hey, Ralph, maybe you're right about that. Can we get together with you guys for counseling for a few months here? So this is 1997 now. We're back on a six-month furlough. So 2 years later, they say, well, yeah, we think you're doing okay. We called it the rolling furlough. And we came back to Russia thinking, yeah, we've got a lot more altitude here. And we did. We really did. Last August, I got a phone call from Ed Tubbs, who was our team leader in Tver. A city between Moscow and St. Pete. He called from Tallinn, Estonia. I knew he was supposed to be in Tallinn this weekend. His team was going away for the missionary team, and the Russians who are on that team there were going away to Tallinn for a weekend getaway. And Ed said, they stamped return entry denied on my visa at the border. I'm kicked out. And they said I violated the terms of my visa, which is a lie. So I suddenly, I didn't realize the magnitude of this, but when it all played out, I realized I got two jobs. Meanwhile, our learning disabled son, for the first time, figures out, hey, I'm different than everybody else, and I'm a burden. And he goes like this. And I don't know, St. Petersburg is kind of about two-thirds or three-quarters of the way up Hudson Bay, to give you an idea where it is. It's not like Minnesota. And, you know, when it gets dark, it gets dark. The sun, here's the horizon. The sun goes like this. It doesn't go like this. It goes like this. And we live in near the center, and there's all these buildings. You never see the sun. There's sunlight for a few hours, but you don't see the sun. And then St. Petersburg has 305 days of precipitation a year. Now, that may be just a snow flurry or a sprinkle, and it clears, but there's a lot of overcast. So it's dark and gray, and it's on the Gulf of Finland, which doesn't freeze hard, so it doesn't get real cold. Freeze-thaw, freeze-thaw, freeze-thaw. Slush water, mud, 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 mud. Dirt, 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 dirt. Two of our Russian members of our team in St. Petersburg went through some pretty significant personal crises. The gals on my team are over there nodding. We had a new couple on the team. There was a lot of tension with incorporating them into the whole thing. Dane and I in January had a talk at the end of the month. Now, we've been 9 years serving in Russia, 7 of those years pretty much on the field by that time. And Dana says, you know, I don't think the experiment is working, dear. We've given it our best shot. I don't think we can do it. We're not able. She was gracious. I'm not able. And she shared, boy, I'm just so down. And we talked about her and where she's at. And next morning, I'm having a quiet time, and I thought, where am I? And I began to write. Can't go to sleep at night. I can't wake up in the morning. I'm harsh with the kids. I'm harsher with my wife. I'm constantly double booking myself. I'm flat out missing appointments. I have no joy doing what has excited my heart for 20 years. I'm a wreck. They were coming so fast, and I had examples for everyone, that I stopped writing in my journal and went to type them. And I got this list, and I thought, what am I going to do with it? And we have a staff counselor one town over, sort of a, really not suburbs in Russia, but it's kind of a suburb of St. Petersburg. And sent it to her and another gal on the staff team and back to Ralph and Jen Ennis. And the staff counselor, Shirley Wilson, 45 minutes later calls me, when are we getting together, Mike? So we set up for the next day, and she went through the list, and she said, I had 20 items. And she wrote an S on each one that she felt like was an issue of spiritual warfare, and a D on each one that was an issue of depression. They all had a D, and half of them had an S. And then she had two other questions. She said, when did it start? And by this point, I'd been thinking about this, and I realized, yeah, it started with that phone call. And my team leader's gone, and I went like this, and everyone, I think, almost everyone, would go and have a dip. But I just didn't come up again. and then all these other things just add in, and I kept going. And then she said, what's your family history of depression? I said, man, I don't think anybody's ever been treated for depression. And then this other gal, Anka Bumpgart, who lives in St. Pete, she travels around Russia and has a national role, but she participates a lot with us on the local level, and we get together, and she asks, well, you know, what about history? And I don't remember anybody ever being treated. And then, you know, I'm kind of slow. Academy grad, you know. And day and a half later, it occurs to me, why did they all drink? I better check this. I write my sister, whose husband is an alcoholic, and she's got the 19-year-old nephew. Kathy, have you ever observed a predisposition to depression amongst the males in our extended family? That night, she's watching the Chicagoland news, and on there is a spot on depression in teenagers. And she's been thinking, boy, there's something really seriously wrong with my 19-year-old. And she thinks, man, he's depressed. I know it. And they gave two websites, and she fires up the computer, and she's looking at the websites, and she clicks send and receive while she's on. And here's my letter. Have you ever observed depression amongst the males in our family? Steve Draper had arranged already, we were just about to have a staff conference, to bring a buddy of his, who is a medical doctor, and his wife's a nurse, and they were going to come over to just serve the needs of the staff. We've got about 50-plus adult staff and then children, just to come over for our staff conference and do consultations, and they were so conscientious. They wrote us all and said, send us your problems so we can come prepared to handle these things. So I sent them my list with the addition that this has been going on since August, and I have probably a strong family history of depression. And he writes back and says, well, I can't believe you're not on antidepressants. Don't those screw your mind up? Aren't those for messed up people? Well, no, they don't screw your mind up. Nobody's been on them for 30 years, but people have been on them for 20, and they can go off them, and the brain works just the way it did before. And so he said, Mike, listen, you know, you got a couple choices. You can ruin your family and destroy, just shipwreck your ministry by staying in Russia without him. Or you can go back to the States where you've done better. Or you can go on antidepressants. And at that point, we didn't know if we were staying in Russia. But I really had to pare down my job, and that caused another crisis on our team. I didn't do a very good job of it and offended a few people. But I went on antidepressants. And about 3 weeks later, Dana says, are you noticing a difference with those things? No. Well, I am. And then the two gals here walk up to me. We're at a retreat, and it was cold in this little dacha cabin that we were in. And while it's wood-burning stoves are heating up, we've all got hats and gloves. And I got my little scarf, and they walk up. I'm 6'4" and 200 and whatever pounds. Mike, you're so cute. Huh? You look like the little prince with that scarf on. No one has ever accused me of being cute. And then I noticed, it was a couple more weeks, I'd go like this, but then I could go like this again. It didn't take me down for days. When President Yeltsin was running for re-election back in 1995, two-thirds of the way through the campaign, he had a heart attack, and then he had a couple more. And he went into hiding, and turns out he had to have bypass surgery. Well, they didn't tell anyone until after he won the election. And then they went to look at him and said to see if they could do bypass surgery, and he was so sick that they couldn't risk the operation. So he had to give all his duties away, and he lived in a hospital, and they treated him day and night just to get his health up to where he was strong enough to endure the bypass surgery. And what I have seen is, I took the antidepressants, and I'm not advocating or whatever, but I went like this, and suddenly, this spring, I realized something that I just don't have the faith for, is when institutions I feel like are against me, I crumble. When the Orthodox Church, you know, the word is, and it's not that it's even me, just this. Or the government is cracking down on new visa regulations, or just Russian culture beats me up. And suddenly, for the first time, just because I got a little more altitude, just like when Yeltsin got a little healthier and then could do the hard work, I came up, and now here I see, here's an issue that never came out. So, I'm 45 now. I believe in helping children of alcoholics. And you know how a sine wave, it kind of goes like this, right? And I'm hoping that I'm up here on the when I'm weak, then I'm strong part. And that the next 5 years, it's, you know, just learning to apply what God has put into my life. But at this point, I think, probably from October till April of every year that I'm in Russia, I'm going to need to take those things if I want my family to be healthy and my ministry. And I'm telling you, I'm excited about the ministry again. And all those Russian alcoholics and children of alcoholics, yeah, maybe I've got a leg up on them that I have medication that they're not going to have access to. But boy, I start talking about things like this, and virtually every male says, oh, you know, I've been depressed at times. You know how I'm absent-minded? I'm only absent-minded in the winter. Or, tell me what depression looks like. I'm wondering if I'm depressed right now. So I feel like it's unfair that I can go and get this help that they can't. But on the other hand, I couldn't be there, A. And B, I sure understand them a lot more. That's my story.